Welcome to the PodTech.net Info Talk series here with Scott Berkin, former Microsoft employee, famous project manager at Microsoft during some very high growth, turbulent times, and the author of The Art of Project Management. Scott, welcome to another segment.
Oh, thank you. Glad to still be here.
Let's talk about, in this segment, about project management in a startup environment. I talk about startups and entrepreneurships mainly for the reason why you wrote your book. I'd like to impart information to entrepreneurs that I wish I had access to. I do some finance series, you know, open source series. Let's talk about a company that has got a prototype, just secured some seed or some Series A financing or first round of venture financing, or they're just growing whether they're self-financed or not. There's a point where it becomes a mess. You know, usually the CEO is selling. The CEO is actually looking over the books. The CEO is basically the project manager, has to give up control and bring on a team and expand the team. Can you talk about your experiences in project management? Because in a way, there's project management skills that need to be, one, changed, disciplines that have to be set in place. How would you advise an entrepreneur or a growing company on lessons of project management, how to install them, et cetera?
Oh, sure, absolutely. What you're talking about is one of the most difficult things that startups deal with, is the transition from that first incubator, early garage, it's just me and my buddy stage, to a point where they have enough funding where they can bring people in to take on some of those responsibilities. So before we even talk about management and leadership, there's just an emotional component to what the CEO has to do and to get his company to the next stage. He has to be comfortable delegating and taking things that he initially was responsible for and may have a pet interest in, and recognize that the best opportunity for growth for his organization is to take those pieces, those responsibilities, and to give them cleanly to someone else. And lots of startup organizations fail at that point, because what drove the CEO to get the company off the ground was his feeling of control over all of these pieces. So there's an emotional component about delegation. Now, the book talks about leadership being about trust, and a good leader will find ways to impart trust to people, and delegation is the common, that's the simplest way to do that. I trust you to own this. I am not going to micromanage you. I know that I may have different opinions than you, but in order for the company to function and grow, I have to take this piece of the business or this piece of the technology and allow you to have responsibility for it. So the first simplest thing is the leader, in this case the CEO, has to recognize that their role is changing and be willing to give up authority on certain things to help to allow the company to grow.
And that's fundamentally what you were talking about earlier segment about project management. It's all about the team at
this Absolutely,
point.
Yes.
And the business goals sometimes conflict with the customer goals or vision and
yes.
execution.
There's a three-way trade-off between what's best for the business perspective, what's best for the customer perspective, and what's best for the technology perspective. And any effective leader, I mean, in this case, the book's about project management, but it's really about leading work, being a leader in whatever kind of work you're doing. Those three perspectives are always in They're always challenging each other.
And they're contentious, too. I mean, if you think about it, that's a really good point. I mean, that's the three-legged stool.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, business, customer, tech.
Absolutely.
And people will fight for their position.
Right.
He's going to say, my algorithm is the best. What are you, crazy? the sales and marketing guy is going to fight for, hey, I need to get the order, and this is a feature that we need. And the business one may be financial pressure.
That's right. Absolutely. And most arguments that go on most software development projects involve that trade-off in some fundamental way. And most of the time, people argue without recognition that that's what they're arguing about. They're making a statement that the programmer is arguing about the algorithm, not necessarily because the algorithm is the best thing for the organization, but he's defending his view of the world, that the programmer is the most central part of the process. Same thing for the business person. The business person sees a marketing opportunity. They're going to defend that because that's what they think.
That's their sacred cow.
Exactly. So we're getting back to your first point, asking about what CEOs and entrepreneurs who are in this central role have to do. They need to establish that in some situations, it is the technological view that's most important, but in other situations, it's going to be the business view that's most important, and yet in other situations, the customer point of view is going to trump the other two.
So in dysfunctional organizations, it's classic. It's kind of like there's no common definition of what success is. You know, it's kind of like I was talking with someone last night about an oil metaphor. If the goal is to drill oil, we all have to agree what oil is.
Absolutely.
And there's no discipline issues. We all – that's oil. Okay.
And it's underneath the ground, and we're going to go down to get it.
How deep is it?
Yes.
Okay, study it. Okay, next factor is maximize outtake.
Absolutely.
It's almost that simple.
Right.
There's no semantics. So in this complex three-legged stool you were mentioning – how does it happen? How do you get by it? What have you seen in your experiences and companies that you've advised and consulted with? What do they need to do? How has it been effective, and what's the best scenario?
So there's a chapter in the book called How to Figure Out What to Do, which is all about managing these three points of view and how do you bring them together so that you have one perspective that unifies everyone. The simplest way to do that is whoever's leading the charge, and in a simple organization, it's the VP or the CEO, whoever's leading the charge needs to be credible to all three of those groups. That if the programming team believes that their CEO understands the technology, they are going to tend to listen to his opinion. If the marketing team thinks that the CEO, same CEO, is credible from a marketing perspective and understands marketing, okay, they'll tend to respect him and respect his opinions. If whoever's the customer advocate thinks the CEO has a good perspective on customers, they'll have trust in him. So whoever's leading needs to
credibility.
Yes, whoever's leading the charge needs to build credibility, and not through manipulative. I'm not saying they should fake it, but they
gotta have working knowledge.
Yes, they have to actually be credible at all these perspectives, and then they can lead the team in making compromises. Effective compromise.
So really, what I'm hearing you say is that most companies can fail, and I'm just kind of putting this together in my mind right now, is that they hire wrong. They think that this guy should be product manager or project manager because he's good with spreadsheets. I've heard people say that. Oh, he's great with spreadsheets. He can coordinate things. What you're saying is absolutely the opposite. They have to be the most talented person.
Well,
they got to be multidisciplinary.
Yes,
right?
I guess. What you're talking about hiring practices. I could go on and on about hiring practices. It's a very frustrating topic. But I'll try not to get too upset on your show because it's not your fault.
He's grinding his teeth. He's about to. I can tell. Did I hit the nerve?
Well, everyone has dealt with someone they've come into contact with in their own organization. They're just like, what the hell? How did this guy get here? And how is he?
He's incompetent.
Yeah. But to answer your question, it's not necessarily that the leadership positions have to be the most talented. They have to have the broadest perspective. So if you have a leader who's an excellent programmer, they come up from engineering and they know technology very well, but they don't understand marketing, they don't need to be marketing experts. They just need to have enough respect for how valuable the knowledge is that they don't have. And then they'll bring in the opinion that they need. If I was that guy, let's say I'm the kick-ass programmer and I get promoted into a leadership role, but I don't know anything about marketing, I don't have to. I just have to recognize that marketing knowledge is important and find someone in my organization that is credible.
That they respect.
Right? And allow them some authority in the decision-making process. So if I'm the lead developer, I can choose to say, wait, let's ask Mark because he's our marketing guy. Let's make sure we have his opinion in the mix before we make a final decision. I don't need to know anything about marketing. To allow that voice to be surfaced.
He's the ace in the hole from that perspective.
Right. And as a leader, my job is no longer about how great I am with technology or what code I can write. It's about how many different points of view can I effectively bring into the process so that our decisions are interdisciplinary and involve the most kinds of perspective. That's the secret. That's how businesses and companies that make great stuff and sell it well, that's how they do it, by bringing in the different perspectives all along the way. And not waiting until the end to allow marketing decisions to happen, and not waiting until the end to really think about the customer, but that their leaders.
There's so many things that could go wrong. I mean, people have to buy your book, The Art of Project Management, and because you have been a very successful project manager, you have to be talented. I mean, and you have to have confidence and the ability to manage people. I mean, it's multifaceted in terms of skill set.
I think you're right. I think part of it is it's really an understanding of the different kinds of talent that exist. And having an appreciation of them. I think that a great leader doesn't necessarily need to be great at any specific thing. They just need to have an appreciation for other people's talents and be able to manage their ego in a way that they allow other people to make contributions.
So back to the startup question, it really comes down to, as teams form and they're growing, obviously roles are changing, it's really recognizing the chemistry between obviously people, but talent. You got a guy you trust, not because some VC said, I need to put this guy in because he's an expert. It has to be at a personal level, a connection. And that becomes actually the core, right? The core issue?
Yeah, that's relationships. I mean, that's part of what the book is about, is that how important – there's a whole chapter about relationships, which is something that most project management textbooks would never even talk about. But the structure of how teams work and how code gets written is the relationships between all the developers.
Yeah, yeah.
How they relate to each other. If that's positive and effective, great, you're going to make progress. If that's difficult and they have conflicts over making simple decisions, progress is going to be slow.
Yeah. Whether you're at a big company like Microsoft or a growing company or simply a startup, project management is a fundamental
absolutely.
Skill.
Yep, absolutely. It's the core to make – it's how you get from day one to day two and get to day 30 with actually something to show for it.
Great. It's a great discipline, Art of Project Management at theartofpm.com. Scott, thanks for this segment.
Welcome. It was a pleasure.